Now we turn to a second important question for the applications, which is that of the boundary conditions. Up to now, we have never discussed really what are the boundary conditions, but they play a very important role in simulations. In thermodynamics, boundaries are usually relevant because one considers macroscopic systems, so systems, boxes in which typical distances are of the order of millimeters, centimeters, or even more than that, and the typical intermolecular forces are essentially negligible over lengths of the order of a few nanometers, which means that in practice the effects of the boundaries are relevant only in a very tiny region close to the boundaries of order nanometers, nothing compared to the width of the box, which is of the order of millimeters or centimeters. But in numerical simulations, our boxes are very small. Typical liquid densities, there are typically 10 to 100 molecules every cubic nanometer. And since the simulations usually have a number of particles which goes from 100 tiny systems up to 100,000 very big systems, it's quite clear that the typical sizes never exceed, in most of the cases, 10 nanometers, which means that with typical interaction range of a few nanometers, you cannot really neglect the effect of the boundaries. So if you take a real box with hard walls, then it's difficult to get infinite volume results. And typically, we want to obtain infinite volume results. So there we must change something, and the idea is that of using what is called periodic boundary conditions. Periodic boundary conditions essentially mimics an infinite system by adding images. So here is an example in one dimension. So imagine that we have four particles that are constrained to lie on a line, on a segment of length L, capital L. So there are four particles and this, let's call box, now the box is a line of length L. So we replace this system with an infinite system, so particles are present on the whole real line, simply by adding images. So we have our system in the center, particles are labeled 1, 2, 3, 4. So we add images all over. So we add new particles, 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A, whose distance is L from the original one. So we are adding one particle on the other side of the boundary, such that the distance between the image particle 1A and the original particle, particle 1, is exactly the box size, L. And then we have a new particle 2A and a particle 2. 3A is connected with particle 3 and 4A is connected with particle 4. But then we add an additional copy of the system at a distance 2L. So we add a particle 1B whose distance from particle 1 is 2L, particle 2B whose distance from particle 2 is 2L, particle 3B, 4B, and their distances from the original particles here, 2L. Then we add a new system whose distance from the original particles is 3L, and so on. And we add these particles on both sides of the original line. And you easily imagine how to generalize the same procedure in two dimensions. So we add copies of the original system, which is a square, all over the plane. So we add additional squares all over the plane. And in each square, we simply copy the positions of the original particles. So they are obtained by shifting the original positions by L. And the same is done in three dimensions. So what is the change? So imagine what is the potential energy of the particles of the original system. So the potential energy in which we only consider particle 1, 2, 3, 4, well, they have to interact with all the others and include the images. And so you see here how it works. The potential energy is the original potential energy. So this is the first term in the last formula at page 1. And then we have to include all images. So we sum over all images, and the sum over all images is this sum over m, in which m is different from 0. And then we sum particle I with all its images I and j. So this is the full interaction. So the full interaction comes with a price. Now we have some kind of infinite volume system, although it's obtained using images, but the price we pay is that for each particle I, the number of interactions is now infinite, because particle I interacts with all possible images, and there is an infinite number of images. Note in the sum over images, we don't restrict the sum to I different from j, because of course particle I also interacts with its image. So particle in R1 interacts with particle in R1a, in R2, in R1b, in R1c, in R1d, all of them. So it interacts with all images. So it comes with this price. But now, which is the way out? Of course, we don't want to do this infinite sum. The way out is the cutoff. We introduce our shifted and truncated cutoff. And if we introduce an RC, which is less than half of the box size, so quite large cutoff, in this case, we don't have to sum over all images, only on some of them. And we don't have to do an infinite sum, but the sum is restricted to a small finite number of particles. So the way out is to introduce the images, periodic boundary conditions, and at the same time we also introduce a cutoff, which we require to satisfy the condition that RC is less than half of the box size. So now let's see how it works. So let's consider particle 1 and the interactions of particle 1 with 2 and the images and all images of particle 2. Okay, so the distance between R1 and R2 is d. The distance between R1 minus R and R2a is d plus l. And note that the distance between R1 and R2d is L minus d. Okay, so this is a crucial point, that we have this L minus d when we consider the interaction between R1 and R2d. So you immediately see that the interactions of R1 with R2a, R2b, R2c, R2d, and all other images can be neglected, because those interactions occur on distances which are larger than RC, and RC is less than half of the box size. So we need only to consider two particles, R2 and R2d, as they can be both less than L over 2. Indeed, there are two possibilities. If d, which is what happens in this picture, so particle 1 and 2. If d is less than half of the box size, as it appears in the picture, then L minus d is larger than L over 2. And so in this case, there is an interaction between R1 and R2, but there is no interaction between R1 and R2d. So in this case, if the distance between particle 1 and 2 is d, we only need to consider the original interaction, R1 and R2. There are no interactions due to the images. But there is also another case. Imagine that now the role of 2 is played by 4. In this case, D is larger than half of the box size. And R1 minus R4D is again L minus D. But in this case, L minus D is less than L over 2. So when you consider R1 and R4, R1 and R4 don't interact. But R1 and R4D interact. So what comes out of this picture, which is the generalization? Consider particle I. Then consider a given J and all possible RJ and images. What turns out from this argument, there is only one particle among RJ and its images that interacts with RI, and it is RJ on one of the image. So in practice, for each pair IJ, there is only one term. So if we introduce a cutoff that satisfies RC less than L over 2, the number of terms that have to be considered is always the same. Particle RI interacts only with n minus 1 particles. Some are the particles which are in the original box, some are images. So this is what happens. So we have one sum which is relevant. And now let's look at this expression, because effectively we don't need to know the particle, we only need to know the distance. So what happens is the following. If D is less than L over 2, the particle then interacts, so R2 and R1 have a distance D. So we need to use V of D. While in the other case, in which R1 and R4D interact, the distance between the two particles is L minus D. So you should convince yourself, looking at these two examples, of the expression, which is the basic expression, which is at the end of the page. So when we sum over all images of particle J, we are left only with one particle. And the distance between this particle and particle I is the minimum between D and L minus D. In the 1-2 case, it was D. In the 1-4 case, it's L minus D. And this is the general formula. So now you see we have considerably simplified the expression in our calculation, in the sense that now we do a summation over all pairs ij, but instead of using the distance between particles I and j, we use the minimum between the distance and L minus the distance. So this is the trick. Now, how do we implement the trick? Because we want to do something more, and in practical implementation, the formula is implemented as discussed at page 4. So let's define a function that I call aNint. This is the definition which is used when you use an old programming language, which is called Fortran. So aNint gives you the closest integer to a given real number. So here there are some examples. So the aNint of 3.7 is 4. aNint of minus 3.7 is minus 4. And aNint of 4.2 is 4, and so on. So it gives the closest integer to a given real number. And then you can show quite easily that the minimum between D and L minus D can be written as expressed in page 4. So it's the absolute value of Ri minus Rj minus L times aNint of Ri minus Rj divided by L. Okay, let's try to understand this. So first thing, note that Ri minus Rj is a number which varies between minus L and plus L, depending on the values of Ri minus Rj. We are not putting here an absolute value. Ri minus Rj is really the number without absolute value. So it varies between minus L and plus L. So let's distinguish three different cases. The first case, this difference varies between minus L and minus L over 2. So a nint of this quantity is equal to minus 1. So here we have, so if this is minus 1, we can just compute the absolute value. So the absolute value is the absolute value minus d plus L. So if the absolute value is d minus L. If ri minus rj varies in this quantity, this is the case in which d is larger than L over 2. So the minimum is LO minus d. And so we have proved the expression. Now let's consider the case in which ri minus rj is included between L over 2 and plus L over 2. In this case, a nint of the ri minus rj divided by L is 0. And so the absolute value is simply d. And in this case, d is less than L minus d. And we have proved the same equation. And then there is the last case, c. In this case, a nint is plus 1. You can work out the detail and convince yourself that you obtain the same expression. So we have proved that dij can be computed in this way. This expression has an advantage, and the advantage is the following. Now imagine that r prime, we replace ri with r prime I, which is ri plus nl, where n is an integer. Then you can immediately see that it makes no difference between the quantity computed using r prime I and ri. This is done at page 5. So let's write r prime I minus rj minus L times a nint of r prime minus rj divided by L. So we replace r prime I with ri. This is something that we can do. And then a nint of n times the real number, of course, n does not play any role, so it disappears. It goes out. So the a nint is minus nl minus l, the a nint. If you take the closest integer of 4.3, this is 4 times the closest integer 2.3. So that goes out, it cancels. And so you see that the expression with r prime is identical to the expression in which you use ri. So this means that the result does not require that ri is included, is between 0 and L. What is the practical advantage of this observation? The practical advantage is for the Metropolis update. Remember that in the Metropolis update, we update ri as written here. This is for one dimension. So we write r prime I is equal to ri plus delta, the random number, minus 0.5. And here in this expression, r prime I may be larger than L or may be less than 0. It is possible if the original ri is close to the boundaries. And in principle, you may think that you have to check if r prime I is outside the original box, so if it's less than 0 or larger than L. And if it's less than 0, you simply add L to put back in the box. And if it's larger than L, you simply subtract L to put it back in the box. This is not needed. This is not needed. It's not required to check that r prime I is L. So you can simply use this expression r prime I equal ri plus delta, random number minus 0.5, without checking anything about the position of r prime I. So it will happen that during your simulation, your r prime I will increase outside the box, but you don't care. You know that the original particle is simply obtained from r prime I by subtracting powers of L, so that at the end it's in 0L, but we are not interested in computing the real position of the particle I. R prime I, which is one image after a while, is as good as RI in order to compute potential energies and to compute also the virial if you use the same convention. Then at page 6, there is the practical implementation in three dimensions, how to compute the potential energy. So the potential energy is now computed as the sum of all pairs of V of Rij hat. So Rij hat is what is called the distance using the minimum image convention. And the minimum image convention is written below. You compute, you have two particles, Ri and Rj, of the coordinates xi, yi, zi, xj, yj, zj. Note that none of them should be inside the box. They can be real numbers, whatever they are, you don't care. Then you compute xij and yij and zij as written here. And then the minimum image convention is computed as the square root, using the usual Pythagoras theorem, as the square root of the sum of the squares of the components. The important point is that all these expressions work only if the cutoff is less than half of the box size. This is the important observation. But usually this is not a restriction. This is certainly not a restriction. So you cannot use a cutoff which is larger than that if you want to use this approach to compute the potential energy and also the other quantities.